Scriptural Relation of Religion and the State, Chapter 3. What is the Legitimate Sphere of Civil Government? Having considered the work assigned to the Church by its Master, we now raise the question as to the legitimate sphere of civil government. Such an inquiry is entirely pertinent to the discussion of a question of a moral or religious nature, for the Bible teaches that an intimate relation exists between God and nations, and between His people and the civil power. Civil power is ordained of God. Infinite wisdom designed and established human authorities, and ordained that there should be laws with power to execute them, recognized and upheld among men. The Apostle writes, "The powers that be are ordained of God." Romans 13, verse 1. This was not a part of the plan primarily presented to man by the Creator, for God desired that all creatures should loyally acknowledge His claims upon them and abide by the pure principles of righteousness which constitute the divine will, and thus all authority would have emanated from God directly. But men chose to depart from this arrangement. They corrupted their ways and became essentially rebellious and sinful. To lead as many as possible back to Himself, to induce men by the gentle persuasion of moral influences, gracious promises, exhibitions of infinite love, the pleadings of the Holy Spirit, by warnings of future wrath, by precept, example, exhortation, and spiritual influence, to give over their rebellion, forsake sin, and be saved eternally, God devised and provided the gospel of salvation through Christ. He committed its work to His Church, but not to the state. If all men would yield to the gentle influences of the gospel and be controlled by its principles, there would be but little to be done by civil law. But mankind does not accept the peaceable overtures of grace. Few, very few indeed, are wholly subject to the law of God, and no force can be rightfully employed to make them so. But some limit must be placed upon evil. Some restraint upon evil tendencies must be exercised, or the race would quickly perish. Men who will not be influenced by moral considerations and moved upon by the love of Christ must be compelled at least to recognize the rights of their fellows. And as every man must give an account of himself to God, it follows that all men should enjoy the privileges of exercising their inalienable rights, and be protected in those rights which pertain to probationary life. This requires that there should be a standard of human rights, a definition of what is right or wrong as between man and man, and that standard should be maintained by force if necessary. God employs only moral and spiritual forces to induce men to do right, but all men are not willing to yield to such suasion. Hence, power and authority is delegated to nations to frame such laws as are necessary for the preservation of the natural rights of men. Paul thus states the object for which the powers that be are ordained. Whosoever therefore resisteth the power, resisteth the ordinance of God, and they that resist shall receive to themselves damnation. For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to the evil. Wilt thou then not be afraid of the power?
Do that which is good, and thou shalt have praise of the same. For he is the minister of God to thee for good. But if thou do that which is evil, be afraid. For he beareth not the sword in vain, for he is the minister of God, a revenger to execute wrath upon him that doeth evil. Romans 13, verse 2-4. To establish and maintain the privileges and duties of good citizenship is therefore the legitimate sphere of the civil power. Having done this, the work of the state is accomplished. But to do this is no small task in this world of oppression, selfishness, and deception. It requires legislation by which principles are declared and laws made. It requires the executive force to give life to the principles enunciated by the lawmaker, and it requires the judiciary, where the laws are defined and the judgment is administered between the law and the offender. To provide for these requires the existence and support of an extensive and elaborate organization, which we call government. The interests and obligations of the government and its citizens are mutual. Every citizen is interested in the maintenance of the government. It is the conservator of his peace, of his rights, and his privileges. For the protection and immunities thus secured to him, the citizen owes the government a hearty loyalty. To prove false to his country is rightfully reckoned one of the most serious crimes a man can commit. The Latin word for citizens is civis, closely related to civilis, from which we have the words civil and civility. So that literally, civility and good citizenship are synonymous terms. They are so practically also. And while the citizen owes a large obligation to his government, the civil power owes to its subjects the promotion of civility and good citizenship, which embraces all the conditions necessary for temporal happiness and the untrammeled enjoyment of every privilege which does not conflict with the rights of others. The greater the liberties secured for the citizen, the more successful is the government. The less there is of interference in private affairs, without jeopardizing the public weal, the better. In the distribution of its benefits, the government should seek to be impartial. It is a flagrant violation of the principles of jurisprudence to gratify popular demand by depriving a few of their rights. Even the whole nation has no right to inflict a wrong upon a single citizen in order to secure their ends, or to compel him to yield his conscience to the demands of an otherwise united community. Just laws are based upon the recognition of individual rights, with the motive of securing these to each individual, impartially and intact. In his days, Nebuchadnezzar built a majestic image of gold. Through a similar object seen in a dream, he had learned of a supernatural power unknown to him before. He doubtless associated that power and that wisdom with the image, and was therefore prompted to erect an image representing this divine power as an object of worship. The conscience of his people acquiesced, and at the dedication of the image there were assembled a vast throng of votaries, embracing the noble and influential men of the realm. Public enthusiasm ran high. At last the signal was given when a universal offering of homage should be paid to the new deity. Public sentiment approved of the action, the law of the land upheld it, the severest penalties enforced it. But at the moment of triumph, the scene was marred. Three men of all that throng stood erect and unmoved. They had no respect nor admiration for the senseless image. Their consciences protested against such foolish idolatry. They declared their honest convictions to the king, but to him it seemed the very height of presumptuous impudence that they should set up their scruples against such a manifestly sacred deity. Their consciences were condemned, and their scruples trampled into the dust. Their God-given rights were sacrificed in the burning fiery furnace. We denounce the action of the king. And why? Because he was an idolater, and the Hebrews were the children of the true God, perhaps, but that is not the ground upon which a just condemnation of his actions stands. For directly after this, he manifests the same unreasonable and injudicious spirit by proclaiming that whosoever said aught against the God of the Hebrews should be cut in pieces, and his house should be made a dunghill. So far as good results are concerned, one action was as barren of them as the other. The wrong consisted in depriving these men of their inalienable rights, which rights are as sacred in a pagan as in a Christian. When Nebuchadnezzar undertook to force the consciences of these men, he overstepped the grounds of legitimate government, and any similar action by any ruler or government, in the interests of any religion whatever, is as truly an infringement upon the most sacred rights vouchsafed to men, the rights of private conscience. We therefore conclude that the duties of civil government are confined by their legitimate bounds to the promotion of the qualities of good citizenship and to restraining that which is inimical to it. That good citizenship is compatible with the truest liberty and the most complete happiness of the people, and that in order to secure these, it is necessary that the consciences of men should be left free and untrammeled.